Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and
Welcome to the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FoxBet. Episode 4 of our free agency previews. Hopefully you guys have tuned in already, gotten your fill of the NFC and AFC South. Of course, the AFC North late last week, and a division that we said might not be all that exciting, so hopefully you're not expecting us to put together an Emmy Award-winning performance. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, a man we can only hope who didn't eat frozen pizza before this morning's podcast, the one, the only Payne Insider.
I'm supposed to say no. Are we going to divulge how we're doing these or no?
Oh, I just figured, I just was hoping you were going to tell me you had egg whites, you ate your Lara bar. It wasn't, I had a meat lover's frozen pizza because that pepperoni really gave me heartburn. I figured if I added some sausage, it was going to help get me through this one.
No. Went with a normal breakfast this go round. And hopefully I can think a little bit more. It's amazing. All right. I operate much better early in the morning on an empty stomach. It's amazing. You start clogging the body with food and your mind starts to go a little bit.
You are a creature of habit, one who refrains from drinking coffee on a regular basis. I know you're anti-energy drink, so you like to come into this natural, not with any chemical enhancements or stimulants to try and get your best performance.
El natural.
All right, here we go. NFC North. This should be relatively short and sweet, all things considered. We look at the current odds from FoxBet to win this division. The Green Bay Packers are listed as the favorite at plus $1.30. They're followed by the Minnesota Vikings at plus $1.60. The Chicago Bears, the new look, potentially, Chicago Bears at plus $4.50. And the Detroit Lions at 9-1. Hat tip to some of the memes we saw out there last week on April Fool's Day, where they basically redid the draft with the Bears selected Patrick Mahomes with the number 2 overall pick. I know that this will be salt in the wounds for a lot of our Bear fan listeners out there who wonder what could have been if Payne's man crush was wearing midnight blue and orange, but alas, not the case. So we're going to go, as we always do, Payne, from worst to first.
I'm happy with how it went.
Yeah, I figured you might be. I figured you might be, Panama Red. So we'll start with the team pegged to finish last, at least in the eyes of odds makers, and it's the Detroit Lions. I'll openly admit, Payne, I have no idea what the hell is going on there in Detroit, what Matt Patricia is doing. So we can start with the players who won't be there in Detroit wearing Honolulu blue and silver. As you can tell, I've spent way too much time with NFL colors. Darius Slay dealt to the Philadelphia Eagles for 2 draft
picks.
What
a move that was, by the way.
They end up bringing in Desmond Trufant, 2 years, $21 million to replace him. But you lose a lot of beef on the defensive line. Snacks Harrison, A'shaun Robinson, Mike Daniels all gone. Devin Kennard off to Arizona. You lose a couple of offensive linemen. Do you want to talk about the Slay deal first and foremost before we figure out what the hell Detroit's doing with the rest of their roster?
It was a good move. I think
for the Eagles, it was.
It was a good move for all parties. Listen, he didn't want to be in Detroit anymore. The Eagles' corner was a position of need. We'll kind of leave it at that till we get to the NFC East. So, you know, listen, when you look at this division, there's so much history. But you look at all of these teams, and it's like, ugh. You know, a lot of mediocrity here. And it's been a real slow offseason in my mind for a lot of these teams. Detroit certainly making a lot of volume transactions. Not necessarily sure what's going on.
Detroit, hold on 1 second. You know what Detroit reminds me of right now? They remind me of that guy in your fantasy baseball or fantasy football league who you know is not going to compete for anything, but just wants to be active on the waiver wire to try and drive up the amount of money he's going to have to contribute to the pot. So he knows he makes the right move. It might take him from 10th in the standings to 9th, but it's not as though any move he's made or she's made is going to take him from 10th to getting into playoff consideration. That's what I feel like the Detroit Lions have become.
Oh, yeah. You know, to your point, I don't really love anything this team does. even one of their best moves, right? Trading for Daron Harmon. Kind of just fell in their lap, right? Belichick was open and honest with him because he loves Daron Harmon and was like, listen, I can't afford to re-sign you. And basically that was the reason they decided to move on, and they placed him in a situation that stylistically made sense with a coach that he was familiar with. This was Belichick really doing a guy he likes and Daron Harmon a favor. Detroit likely doesn't land Harmon any other way. That said, right, very good cover safety, something the Lions secondary desperately needed. They were horrific in coverage, finished 29th in defensive pass efficiency, 27th in explosive pass defense. So Harmon should help there a little bit. Again, you know, you deal my guy Slay, you get some picks back. Trufant probably helps fill that void for a little bit, but he's not any spring chicken. He's coming off an injury plague season. He's going to be 30 when this year comes around, but probably helps them a little bit here. The secondary could get improved pretty quickly there, unless there's, you know, an offer the Lions can't refuse, where a team's trying to trade up in front of Miami. Okuda probably makes some sense. Maybe they do trade out of three. But the folks that I kind of respect there basically have provided three options. It's Okuda. It's a trade down. And then maybe Okuda, if he's still there, if it were to go to, say, sixth for the Chargers, maybe Okuda's still there. They take him at six. There's been some talks of Derek Brown as well to fill some of those huge voids for Detroit's interior line. That's basically what I'm hearing from Detroit. Danny Shelton, not a bad signing, kind of reunites with his former coach. Should help fill the void again with guys like Snack Harrison and A'shaun Robinson, who have both departed. Think they're going to try to draft an edge rusher. Might be in play for one in free agency as well, as guys start to see their value diminish or even drop their own price tag. Maybe they end up with a free agent defensive end. We'll see. Offensive line, we want to talk about that?
Yeah, I want to get your take on this Vaitai signing and the fact that they think he is going to be a linchpin in their offensive line. A guy who I watch in Philadelphia who, you know, hey, I'm not going to be overly critical because I won't claim to be a scout or have the same trained eye you do. Oftentimes for me, you look like a turnstile more so than a building block.
Yeah. You know, I think there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot to work with. He's still pretty raw. The sad part here is, you know, the Lions, probably their best overall unit on the team last season was their offensive line. You could argue that they were a, you know, fringe top 10 offensive line, and the two key cogs responsible for that production are gone, right? Glasgow and Wagner gone. You overspend on Vaitai. Everything points to spending a day two pick on a guard. So the one thing that Detroit does have, five picks in the first four rounds, if they end up trading down out of three, you probably add to that as well. So the draft is going to be very, very important for the Lions this season. A lot of holes to fill.
Yeah, I just didn't understand the Vaitai signing. Graham Glasgow, I mean, would have been more than suitable, if not better. I don't see it being an upgrade, but
listen, I think unless the money is staggering, there are a lot of people who do not want to play in that organization. And I think at the end of the day, you can only be so good if you don't respect the man leading you. And we have seen stories come out, whether it was Darius Slay, whether it was a former guy in the special teams who's no longer in the NFL, saying, listen, the guy isn't very good. He's not a very positive human to be around. And he walks around with an ego because of championship rings, which Bill Belichick provided him. And he's not like a fraction of the coach that Belichick is, obviously. So the locker room is a little bit of a mess. Not many respect the head coach. In a scenario like that, it's very difficult to be overly good. That's just kind of what I'm hearing. So.
No, makes sense. I mean, culture goes a long way, and it doesn't matter if you're a football franchise, if you're a small business, or if you're a Fortune 500 company. There's a trickle-down effect from number one man on your roster and the head man all the way down to the key cogs in the wheel. So it makes a ton of sense. When you look at the Bears, Payne, we knew that they had grown restless and weary of life with Mitchell Trubisky. They, of course, go out this offseason and trade for Nick Foles, bringing him from Jacksonville, creating a quarterback competition. We can say what we want. Semantics, window dressing, how that's going to look. They also bring in Robert Quinn. They give him a nice chunk of change to bring him over from the Cowboys to kind of help that defensive line. But he was very mediocre, at least in large parts, before his breakthrough campaign last season. They cut ties with Leonard Floyd, Clinton Dix, and Prince Amukamara gone, Taylor Gabriel on the offensive side. What do you think of the Bears offseason and what Matt Nagy's trying to do there along with GM Ryan Pace?
Not quite sure what Ryan Pace is ever really trying to do. It's amazing how far he's slipped, right? I believe he won like Executive of the Year or GM of the Year in his initial season, but whew, it has been ugly since then. He is certainly on the hot seat. He knows he's on the hot seat, and that's why he brings in a veteran presence in Nick Foles. And that's really what this season's going to come down to, because this division's pretty wide open. I think Nick Foles, the one thing that he's going to do pretty well is he can get the ball out quickly. He can get the ball out on time. He's proven that he can take care of the football. His turnover-worthy throw percentage are off the charts. There's a ton of familiarity here, obviously, and that's the key. I know they are saying that this is an open quarterback competition. I don't think you're paying Foles what you're paying him. Now, they did restructure that deal a little bit, but you gave up, what, a fourth rounder for him? It's a win-now mentality. You brought him in specifically, I think, to be your starter immediately because of his connection to Matt Nagy. He's also spent time with QB coach John DeFilippo. He spent time with OC Bill Lazor. So there is a connection there to all three guys. The only question that you probably have in the back of your mind when it comes to Nick Foles is like, this could go really, really well or really poorly, because honestly, Foles hasn't been very good if he's not wearing an Eagles jersey. Maybe, you know, it translates this time with so much familiarity with the coaches in the system. Jimmy Graham, you know, it feels like there's 19...
You can say what you want.
Yeah, it feels like there's 19 tight ends on this roster already, but the production was horrible. If you look at the tight end position last year for the Bears, 46 total catches, a fraction over 400 yards and just two touchdowns from the tight end position, despite having a slew of tight ends. So what does Pace do? Because he couldn't find, you know, 18 previous good tight ends. He goes and gets Jimmy Graham. Listen, if you really look at the fine print in that contract, it's a one-year, $9 million deal. It's still a lot. I don't know how good he is now. I think he's, what, 33, potentially going to be 34 at some point in the midst of next season. He is what he is. I don't know. Robert Quinn, you mentioned, that's a really interesting signing. It's boom or bust again, and maybe that's what Pace is looking for here. He says to himself, listen, I probably only have another year here unless things go really well. 5 for 70 is a big deal. Now, again, if you look into these contracts, and that's the important thing to do, there's a lot of junk money on the back end of that deal. The final 2 years are really easy to get out of. You could make a case that this is really a two-year, $30 million deal if you wanted to. It's just tough to gauge the signing because we don't really know what he is. Like, Quinn was an absolute monster in 2014. He was a monster last year with a ton of help on the Cowboys' defensive line. But then you had a couple seasons in between where he was injured for two seasons. Then you had a team like the Dolphins bring him in. They were desperate for an edge rusher. They let him go after his sack numbers were really horrific, and he looked old, right? He looked like beaten and battered. Somehow, though, if you look at some of the metrics for that season with the Dolphins, he's actually number two in pass rush win rate, only behind Aaron Donald during that season in Miami. So very odd. But in general, like, it's a lot of money. Quinn struggles to set the edge and stop the run, so his production is very much reliant on getting to the quarterback. So again, for me, huge boom or bust signing with Robert Quinn.
This whole division for me feels like an absolute mess, and we'll see who ultimately emerges. Of course, we talked about two teams projected to finish in third and fourth, respectively. A team pegged for second with a legitimate shot to win the divisional crown, that being the Minnesota Vikings. They had a ton of salary cap casualties. We know the direction that they were headed in. You get Kirk Cousins to restructure his deal and Danielle Hunter's deal as well to mean less of a cap hit. The Vikings go out there. They add Michael Pierce to make up for losing a lot of familiar faces on the defense. But Payne, I mean, you've been pretty open and honest with this Vikings defense, getting by more on name recognition and reputation than actual production. Were there any defensive losses that you thought were going to negatively impact them? Or do you think the Vikings are in a situation where it's addition by subtraction headed into 2020?
So the big thing here is Andre Patterson, the defensive line coach, and Zimmer will now be sharing co-defensive coordinator duties. And we talked, to your point, about like how fugazi a lot of the defensive metrics were for the Vikings last season, and caught some flack for that from Vikings fans. And then days after the season ends, Zimmer cans a few of his defensive guys. So, you know, he saw a lot of the things that we saw. You mentioned some of the guys that he lost. Andrew Sandejo, he's a guy that was basically in and out and in and out, and they don't think much of him at this point. Xavier Rhodes, we mentioned, was getting up there in age, was battling a bunch of injuries, didn't have a big season despite somehow being a Pro Bowler. I do think the Colts made a nice signing of him, right? Because your hope is that he's going to get healthy in this elongated offseason. You didn't give him much money. You're competing for a Super Bowl. So if he can provide that veteran presence as a physical, bigger corner, certainly makes more sense for the Colts. Trey Waynes, you know my feelings on him already. Everson Griffin, I really like him. Well, he came out and said he is not returning to the Vikings at this point. You're looking at some of his, I guess, what he could potentially be worth on the open market, and I think he's a little shocked at this point. I did hear recently that he would prefer playing for Seattle. Probably some PR moves there from him and his agent, knowing that Jadeveon Clowney also prefers to stay in Seattle, and he's since dropped his asking price. So a little gamesmanship there. Let's see who Seattle ultimately decides to go with at defensive end. Linval Joseph would be a decent-sized loss in terms of a run stuffer, but you bring in Michael Pierce, you can look at his numbers defensively well. Baltimore wasn't great stopping the run, and he was in and out of the lineup with some injuries last year. When he was healthy and in the lineup, Baltimore was different stopping the run. So Michael Pierce should more than make up for Linval Joseph. I think offensively, that's where kind of, you know, a lot of people are nervous potentially about what that could mean. Stephon Diggs departing for Buffalo via trade. To me, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think that relationship between Diggs and the organization and Diggs and some of the players wasn't very good towards the end. Both parties were very frustrated with how things were going. I mean, listen, I think Diggs is a fine player. But the guy has a temper tantrum in a playoff game because he wasn't getting the ball. Meanwhile, his team's leading on the road against the Saints. It's not really the kind of guy Mike Zimmer wants in his locker room. They would probably address that number two receiver position very early on in the draft. Been linked to Denzel Mims, the kid out of Baylor. So let's see if potentially he's still there. But that's really what it looks like for the Minnesota Vikings at this point.
Yeah, an interesting team that I don't think has ever quite lived up to some of the expectations. We've seen Kirk Cousins take steps forward as far as his evolution as a franchise quarterback, and we'll see if reshuffling of some of these pieces will keep Minnesota in contention for a division title and ultimately a playoff spot that comes along with it. And last but not least in the division, a team that we were major detractors of. I drew all sorts of flack for calling them frauds given their record, not the fact that they went out there, made the playoffs, and advanced all the way to the NFC Championship, but those, of course, being the Green Bay Packers. Last year in free agency, they added four regular contributors, highlighted by the Preston and Za'Darius Smith signings. We talked about it last year. That was uncharacteristic for Green Bay. They typically don't go out and sign high-priced free agents. They elect to build through the draft with a lot of their homegrown talent. Well, we knew coming into this offseason that Green Bay wasn't going to be replicating last offseason. season, and to a certain extent, they've lived up to that with minor adds in Devin Funchess, Rick Wagner on the offensive line, Christian Kirksey in the linebacking core. You mentioned Jeremy Graham off to the Bears, but there are some other major defections defensively, Payne, as well. When you look at Blake Martinez, B.J. Goodson, Kyler Fackrell, and on the offensive line, Brian Bulaga has moved on to greener pastures, so to speak. What did you make of what Green Bay elected to do this offseason and what the expectations will be for Matt LaFleur's bunch going into next season, seeing if he can repeat some of the success he saw in his maiden voyage?
You know, the division's wide open. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the schedule looks like when it's released. But I think from the early onset, there's an idea that based on last season, the Packers could be in for a down year. You mentioned the money they spent on the defensive side of the ball last year. There were still some serious issues defensively. Had trouble stopping the run. The secondary was improved, but a lot of that was based on the schedule of quarterbacks and passing offenses that they had played. So if suddenly the schedule takes an uptick, the secondary might not be as good as people think it is. Really, I think where the question marks come in and the issues a lot of people are having is offensively, what are you giving Aaron Rodgers? And maybe that's going to come through the draft this year, but I don't think signing Devin Funchess is necessarily going to be the thing that gets you over the top offensively. You're going to have to figure out how to replace Brian Bulaga. I know they brought in Rick Wagner, but you're probably going to add a lineman in the draft potentially early on. This offense just needs more weapons, point blank, period. And you have to surround him with guys that are capable. And I don't think they have that right now. Certainly you're going to need a tight end, you would think. I just don't think right now offensively this team's equipped to make a serious run. I think why you were so down on them last year is because of the luck factor. There were a lot of things contributing to the record that didn't look so good metrically. And again, let's see what the schedule looks like. But I can tell you from the guys that I speak to in the offseason, just generally speaking, a broad sweeping brush was like, hey, the Packers are probably a team that we're going to be looking to sell. Let's see if that comes to fruition once the draft concludes, if we see that they didn't add the necessary parts offensively to give Aaron Rodgers a fighting chance, and then again, what the schedule looks like when it does eventually release.
Pretty crazy when you look at the way this division will play out with all of these teams more or less standing pat, or in some cases maybe weakening their overall talent pools, that you could find a team in this quartet to win 10 football games. But as you said, we'll see what the schedules look like, and that'll obviously be a determining factor in terms of what the true out forecast looks like for these teams. I know win totals available at FoxBet, but oftentimes very difficult to discern where there's some value until you know how the week-to-week schedule will shape up.
And I just think, right, you're looking at year two of Matt LaFleur. The one thing that we saw teams do, right, was adjust off his script. So now you're in year two getting to see what Matt LaFleur's done, and we know that he doesn't usually have a counterpunch. Now with more familiarity of what he wants to do, that's why it's even more vital that you bring in some weapons here for Aaron Rodgers.
When you look at these four teams, Payne, knowing that they haven't really done a heck of a lot, at least on paper, to improve themselves, we know what some of the advanced metrics suggest for regression in either a positive or negative manner. Is there a coaching staff that you have a lot more confidence in? I mean, would it be the Vikings, as clear-cut runaways in this group of teams as far as, hey, look, yes, they've made some of the moves, but this is a coaching staff I think they can get the most out of its talent, where the other three, the jury's still out?
I think the Vikings probably are in the best position, right? They're going to have to figure some things out defensively. You hope with Zimmer being a little bit more hands-on, you know, and you think Diggs, maybe that's not as big of a deal if you can bring in a young receiver. The problem is you're probably going to need to find a veteran receiver, because when you think about the transition from college to the NFL, one of the toughest positions to transition to is wide receiver. And now that you're probably going to have a shortened camp, it's going to be even more difficult for receivers, I think, to potentially get acclimated into their new or their rookie receivers get acclimated into these new teams. That's kind of the lone issue there. There are a lot of question marks, but in terms of the coaching staff, Minnesota, I mean, I like Matt Nagy. I really do. So I think if you can get enough out of Foles and you have the defense is never going to be what it was 2 years ago. It's impossible to replicate those many turnovers. But if you can improve on last year and find a middle ground and Nick Foles ends up being that guy, Chicago's going to be right there in the mix as well at the top of this division.
What was the line from last year? Just be average?
Yeah. I mean, listen, let me look at the numbers here. I'm looking at Chicago, and, you know, you look at some of the efficiency metrics, and again, like, overall doesn't look terrible. They were eighth in overall defensive efficiency. They faced one of the toughest schedules. But I just don't think there's a lot of deficiencies there whether you look at some of their key metrics. So I think if you can improve there on the defensive side of the ball, you're not going to be what you were in 2018. But if you can get closer to that and then you get some good quarterback play out of Nick Foles, which is certainly possible in a familiar system, they're going to have a chance potentially to make some noise in this division.
Should be interesting. Maybe interesting for all the wrong reasons. I'm not sure there's a bona fide Super Bowl contender residing in the NFC North, but it doesn't mean there is an opportunity to buy some of these teams at a low point or sell at the peak of the market and ultimately identify some value within the division. I'm going to give you a free pass this week, Payne, for this show at least. You don't need any Netflix recommendations, any TV shows. And you know what? Judging by the fact that you're deciding to cram frozen pizzas down your gullet in the morning, I can't even offer the opportunity for you to provide nutrition tips to try and keep people sane while continue to fight through their quarantine.
That's you. You're the healthy guy.
I mean, I've debated sending out some of these minimalist workouts and everything else that's available to try and find all these different body weight activities and exercises you can perform in, you know, the smallest of apartments in a garage or anything else. But trust me when I say this, I'm shocked
you haven't done that yet. You're the content guy.
Well, you know, I try and put some of that stuff out, but I'm not going to claim to be a fitness guru by any stretch of the imagination when it comes down to it. But I am counting the days until I can actually move a weight and go into the gym the same way a lot of people are looking to go return to their finer restaurants. But in this time, just tell everyone to be smart, be safe, be strategic. That pertains to all aspects of life and obviously what you're doing with your bankroll, keeping that thing healthy for college and pro football season. Any final words of advice, wisdom, parting shots, things that you would like to share with our loyal listeners, Payne?
That's it.
All right. Be sure to follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, as always, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Enjoy. I guess that's halfway through your free agency previews as we inch ever so close to the next major sporting event on the calendar, the NFL Draft, April 23rd to 25th. And hopefully in the interim, we'll see you at the window.